This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hey, welcome to Tech Talk, and my name is Jeff Sandhu. So recently, I was away for the AWS reInvent 2017, thanks to AWS. And during that time, I got a chance to speak to two individuals you'll hear on later in the show about a topic that we don't really talk often. Here on Tech Talk, we always talk about the future and how it would look like and so on and so forth. So rarely do I have the chance to talk about the past, but today, that changes, because on the show today are two gentlemen that are working to preserve our history for the future of tomorrow and empowering a nation in growing their talent pool as a social enterprise project. This is one amazing story about a company called Digital Divide Data, or DDD.
Okay, hi, my name is Frank Heitmann. I'm the president of DDD, or Digital Divide Data.
If you were to Google Digital Divide Data, their story is fascinating. They are a 15, 16-year-old social enterprise focusing on workforce development. They are an NGO, a non-profit as well, in that they are providing work for young people.
At the same time, we are providing them scholarships so they can get higher education. If you look at us from a business perspective, we are providing BPO, means IT services, out of our offices to international clients. Company is about 1,000 people. We operate across three different offices, one in Kenya, one in Cambodia, and one in Laos.
So you might be wondering, an NGO nonprofit who's based in Kenya, Cambodia, Laos, but they're providing IT services and delivery of digital content, data and research services to clients like Reader's Digest, which we all Malaysians had a love for it, Harvard Business School, New York Daily News, Stanford University, and yes, you're going to be surprised with the next one, Ancestry.com. But come on, are you really surprised though? These guys work with the National Museum of Kenya on making their museum one that will still be a dream place of many to visit in the future. Why? In case you didn't know, the National Museums of Kenya...
We hold one of the largest fossil collections in the world. We also hold one of the largest archaeological collections also in the world. We also hold a very large botanical collection, and that draws people from all over the world who come to study these wonderful collections.
And that was...
My name is Dr. Frederick Chalamandi. I'm the head of Earth Sciences Department at the National Museums of Kenya in Nairobi.
But just how did the Digital Divide Data company begin their journey? And what's the story here? So back in 2001, gosh, it's been 16 years ago. So Jeremy Hockenstein, who is the co-founder and the CEO of DDD, he traveled to Angkor Wat.
He was backpack traveling in Cambodia, and he was a consultant at McKinsey. And, he saw all the young people in Cambodia and the poverty, basically, and the lack of work. And he said, okay, there must be a way to bring work into this country. And because of his consulting background, he said, look, technology is the way we need to use. So he started this idea 15 years ago and used the internet to, have work done in Cambodia for American customers. And that allowed him basically then to develop that work-study concept where the customer started to pay for those services. That payment could be used to pay the use, and then the payment also could be used to start to provide education. And then there were a lot of philanthropic support over the years coming together. So that's how this thing developed. We then opened our offices in Laos with the same concept. And 4 or 5 years ago, we opened the offices in Kenya through the Rockefeller Foundation. And yeah, so we have been pretty consistently applying that approach over the last 15 years.
So then DDD was born, and since then, they've always been on a social impact mission. Their business model is called Impact Sourcing and has been implemented by dozens of firms around the world since.
The idea is really also that we want to make an impact on young people, and that was one of the driving factors, for example, Kenya. where we saw there's a lot of talent, there's a lot of poverty, and that that model could help, you know, young people really to get to, you know, a way better life. And so the driver here is both. It's social as well as business side. Now, from a business side in Kenya, the advantage certainly was that most of the Kenyan youth speaks fluent English. And that makes it for sure way easier to provide services to an international customer base. So that's the logic behind it.
And for it to be running for 16 years now is an achievement by itself, being a social enterprise. But as you'd expect, things weren't so easy from the get-go.
So 15 years ago, I can tell you, we were a charity doing a little bit business. Today, I would say we are a business doing good for people. And that's a major difference for sure. Now, what are the challenges? I mean, that's pretty easy to see, because we are in a competitive, very competitive industry, BPO, okay? Most of our customers actually do not really care about our social component. They just want a service in a very professional way to be delivered. Now, I, on the other side, you know, I'm dealing with a workforce which is, you know, disadvantaged to some extent, because they are not coming out of the prime universities and all this stuff. So that in itself embedded is a challenge. However, there's an opportunity which is on the same side. But that's really, you know, the challenge we have to deal with on a daily basis. But the fact that we are 15 years around, actually, I think is proof that we found a way how to deal with it.
But it's about the satisfaction at the end of the day and working with these young people. And it goes back to the fundamentals of any business thousands of years ago. It's about the people.
If you give young people who are in need in some sense, an opportunity, the amount of motivation those young people bring is amazing. And so you don't have to encourage them to learn, because they know that is their opportunity. So that's one major difference. The other difference, I would say, is engagement. They, you know, if you talk to our students, they don't see us as an employer. They see us as a bigger family, you know. And particularly now when we teach them leading edge skills. You know, I said to one of the students, hey, now when you get your certification, do me a favor, don't resign and go to the next company, which is what normally happens. And that young girl looked at me and said, Frank, I would never do this. You are my family. I mean, this is a very strong point I find, particularly in the BPO business, you know, where attrition is just, you know, shocking the whole industry every time. So.
Now, getting that family spirit in an organization is a dream to many CEOs and business owners. People spend millions on training programs to empower them to be cohesive. And those teamwork make a dream work talk. That's the essence of any business. So just how did they achieve this?
The IT industry is really rude in the sense of, you know, you go for profits, you go for earnouts. The faster the better, and the more the better. Now, what suffers in that environment, and I'm not generalizing for all companies, but for many companies, is the amount of investment you put into your own employees. If you start to develop young talent, it costs time, it costs money, and it's patient, okay? Most of the companies just don't have time for that. So they want, okay, people ready, I can build them, and I can really make great money. Now, if you look at this from the employee perspective, there's not really a commitment there from the company other than giving you a monthly paycheck. Now, what we are doing is we are investing money, time, care into those students way ahead in the beginning. And they realize that, you know, they realize really this is a give and take, you know. And I think that's one of the differences I see, why these young people really feel strongly connected to us.
So here's how DDD works. It's a little bit complex because they essentially make a long-term commitment to these young people. So they're a little bit selective in the beginning. So they got a clear definition of what kind of people or students they are looking for. And these things include things like...
So we look for disadvantaged children, as I said before. So if you are the daughter of a lawyer, that's not what we are looking for. You will find somewhere else. We are looking 50-50. We are looking for 50% women, right? So sometimes we say, okay, we're only looking now for employing young females. So So out of the gates, we have a set of criteria which we apply. Then they go through a pretty stringent interview process, really to see, are they willing to show that commitment, and are they also interested to do this from a long-term perspective? That's the selection we make. Then they come to us, and the first 6 months, they are on an internship, if you like. So they do not get right away the scholarships. And then we look at them the first 6 months, and we, you know, look at their performance, we look at their attitudes, and then we make, after those 6 months, is a decision day to say, you know, are you now qualifying for your scholarship? And if that's the case, then they enroll into our company as an employee. But at that point in time, we usually make a 4 years commitment.
And this is why they're also attractive to the market out there, competing against other BPO companies in the world. What ties them together is the employee engagement, that commitment that they give.
And you see that when they are doing their day-to-day work, which actually at the end of the day the customer benefits from it, right? Now, if I train one of our young students in a customer environment, that student doesn't leave. So the relationship between our workforce and the customer is a very, very solid relationship. And there's many, many customers out there who see this as a true value, right? So if my price point is the same, if my quality is the same, I can provide a way more engaged workforce, you know, that's the way how I get myself into business. So, and you know, but I have to say, there are also other customers who do care about social impact, and they do care about giving back. And for them, for many customers, is also, you know, in a positive sense, a PR message to say, you know, I'm consuming work from an environment where I also generate out of my payments good for the world and for young people.
Currently, they have had about 1,200 people whom have went through this program, and despite some of them leaving naturally, climbing up the ladder, being successful, they still keep that relationship going.
They're still part of the families, and a matter of fact is, you know, some of them became customers over time, for sure. You know, they got good jobs, and then they had job to give, and then they said, you know what, I go back, give it to DDD.
We'll be right back, and next up we'll learn about that project in Kenya, about preserving the past for our future, and how the whole process is like. Stay tuned, Tech Talk on BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
Hey, and we're back, and my name is Jeff Sandhu, and I'm sharing one of my stories from my recent AWS reInvent 2017 trip in Las Vegas, USA. Las Vegas is like the only place that you could host an event like reInvent. There were almost 40,000 people from what I've heard of around the world. Exhibition halls galore. There's a whole full 3 floors of business meeting rooms for private conversations like the ones I've had, and workshops, and the entire strip is fully booked out of people with AWS lanyards. It was almost as if it became an AWS city, which could be possible with their massive growth rate. There were almost about 22 new announcements that was made on the first day itself during Andy Jassy's keynote. He's the CEO of AWS, which is Amazon Web Services, in case you didn't know. Now, early on, we were talking about digital divide data and their unique impact sourcing business model. Frank Heitman, the president of Digital Divide Data, is my guest. And later on, you'll also hear from Dr. Frederick Kahlo, the senior research scientist and paleontologist, and also the head of the Department of Earth Sciences in the National Museums of Kenya. Now, the entire impact sourcing business model has made them an NGO, nonprofit, and a social enterprise in the BPO sector.
Now, the big challenge was, you know, how do I take leading-edge technology sets and bring them into underserved parts of the world, and then even to even more underserved young people? Is that working? And we took a risk. And I think that's what I actually saw as innovative, you know, from a workforce development. You just tried something which wasn't tried before. I got tremendous support from Amazon. I have to say, I talked to Teresa Carlson a year ago, who's head of the public sector. I said, look, imagine if we can create a blueprint, which we can roll out in underserved parts of the world and create supply against the global demand you have. It's a win-win game. You know, you guys get the support you need and your customer base, and we create good in the world. Yeah, and we started this in January. We went live. We selected initially 30 of our students. We said, okay, let's give it a shot. I personally said, if I only get 50% pass rate, I will be happy. Because we wanted them to get the official certification. As a, you know, because we want to be a business and we have to compete on that level. And I said, that's tough. It's really tough, as you know. And, they all made it, 100%. I mean, I was blown away. I said, this is impossible. And really with good grades. So now we have a blueprint. We have seen it works. The only thing we need to do now is to scale it, roll it out, you know, bring it to other parts in the world. We want to bring it to Cambodia. We want to bring it to Laos. We want to bring it to our other offices. Just repeat the same thing.
And one of the core projects at the moment is digitalizing the National Museums of Kenya, a museum that holds much of our beginning that is vital to preserve for the future. They are an important part of our history.
Like I said earlier on, our collections draw people from all over the world, particularly in the US, who come to do research on our fossils, on our archaeological material. And some of those groups have done some very minimal digitization on some of our records. But a few years ago, we began thinking about how best we can embark on a large-scale project and that will see us digitize our collections and make them available, make those records available to the larger community. You know what I mean? The world is becoming a global village. So we began thinking about that and we developed a proposal, and we're very happy that the DDD came on board and we are working together in this particular project that is going to see us digitize a large part of our collections. We began with the collections in the Earth Sciences Department, that is the paleontological collections and also the archaeological collections. And at the end of it, we also want to build a virtual museum through which people will be able to visit our museum at the comfort of their sitting room or dining room and really appreciate the wonderful collection that we have in our museum in Nairobi.
And about 3 years ago, they embarked on this journey into the archaeology section, and then they've expanded it to paleontology, which is a scientific study of life that existed prior to the Holocene epoch, which is the current period of the geologic time. So just imagine about 11,700 years ago. Just think about that. So the National Museum of Kenya is, of course, not the first in the world to do this, to go digital, but it is a hugely important one for the nation as well. It's bringing scientists and even people like you and me to come to Kenya.
Even before people come to Kenya to study our collections, they'll be able to determine, like for example, I'll give you a good example, how many bovids, how many elephants we do have in our collection. Then that will enable make some more informed decision as to whether really they need to come to the museum. Initially, we've been having people write to us before they come to the museum and just asking us, do you have this particular taxa? And if so, how many individuals do you have out of this taxa? So I think beginning this process will provoke really good science in a big way. And it will enable people really make more informed decisions even before they come to Nairobi. Talking about the virtual museum, I know that yes, there's the fear that if you make the museum available virtually, then you limit the number of people who physically come to the museum. I think we also need to appreciate that people will be able to even make more informed decision to come to the museum physically based on what they've seen virtually. And so I don't think it would mean in any way, in fact, the number of visitors who would visit the museum. Again, also, we will be very careful. We won't put all the information out there. We'll kind of really filter the information that will be out there, because we still want people to come to Kenya. So there'll be some limits as to how much information will go online.
And technology now is more important than ever. We have to start thinking about making this available in the internet day and age where we spend most of our days and lives looking at a black screen, our phones. So it only makes sense to use technology to save museums and its heritage. But it's a never-ending process.
Technology is evolving all the time. And I'll give you a good example of the Smithsonian that I work very closely with. They're always evolving. They're always coming up with new ideas. Museums across the world, like, for example, a few years ago, we were not talking about 3D CT scanning, but now it's become a big thing. And in fact, there's a lot of, we receive requests from different museums across the world who want to work with us in doing 3D CT scans of our collections. And there are new technologies that are coming up all the time, and the new even storage facilities online that are coming up all the time, like the Morpho space. The other day I shared this idea with some colleagues at Duke who want to scan some of our material, and they're talking about how they will store these images in a Morpho space, whatever it is. Yeah, so I think we are evolving really very fast in terms of technology. Yeah, so I don't think there's any single museum across the world, even the big ones like the Smithsonian, that can say that I think we've done very well, because new ideas are coming up all the time. Having said that, I want to say that this particular project for sure is going to put our museum at the top, because I think it's probably the first museum in Africa that it will be embarking on this very ambitious project. And I do believe that more museums, especially in Africa, will follow really our model, and they'll be able to, we'll be very happy to share it with them. I'm sure working with DDD, we'll be very happy to see how we can help them also develop a similar program. And again, also really try as much as possible to share information with our colleagues and even visitors who want to come to our museum. But I think the most key thing here to us as a museum is how best we can share that data with the scientific community. I think our interest is largely sharing data with the scientific community, at least because we know this is exactly where our science is going, being able to share data. And most projects that work in our museum are all working very hard, in fact, to share data with different projects across the world.
But you should be excited soon, because they've just finished digitizing more than 10,000 records, and they're now doing 3D CT scanning on some of these records, and they're also indexing those.
So now the next phase now will be to work on the virtual museum. But I think I should also emphasize the fact, like Frank said earlier on, the involvement of young people from poor backgrounds, really being able to take the lead in this particular project. To me, it gives me special really happiness to see young Kenyans taking ownership of this project. Whenever I go into the labs when this is happening, I feel so encouraged, because these are young Kenyans who are taking full ownership of the project, and I would like to really salute DDD and Amazon for this wonderful support, because I think it's a way of really helping enabling Kenyans take ownership of their heritage. And because they are learning all the time, the new techniques, and they are taking ownership and taking pride over their heritage. In fact, you'll be very surprised that very few of these young people knew about these collections before this project began. So now they are beginning to appreciate the wonderful heritage that the country has. And I'm sure it will even provoke them to even talking to their brothers, talking to their sisters about Kenya's heritage, which is really, really unique and unparalleled.
And they're now, of course, working closely with Digital Divide Data on this, and it's projects like these that keeps them going in the social mission. And they've got big dreams to dominate this space, because there's a huge global impact when these projects are successful.
I think the impact is going to be twofold. One is for the industry. I think the industry really needs to be way more innovative when it comes to workforce development and leading skill sets, you know? And that's the industry. I can't be an employer and say, I just want Finnish solution architects. Okay, so what is your contribution to build that, right? So I think, I think it's a way of innovative workforce development to try and do that. So I think if we grow and other companies see that is, a working concept, I truly hope it will be replicated. It doesn't have to be done by myself or by the company itself. It's going to be repeated. And from the social side, the impact, I think, is also tremendously significant. I talked about 50-50 before. You know, we just have here certified 2 young females out of Kenya. They live in an environment where gender equality is not totally non-existing, yeah? not in the sense that we know it. Now, and these young ladies now are technology leaders on the leading edge technology. So I think also from a social social perspective, that will have impacts. I'm pretty sure about that.
And all of these at the back end of the backbone structure is AWS, or Amazon Web Services, and how they've made it easier for anyone to learn programming with services like AI in the cloud that really just helps you with your digital journey. I, for one, can't wait for the ability to visit the National Museums of Kenya virtually in the coming months. As for DDD...
So for the next year, what's on the horizon completing this project successfully, because I think that will be a major milestone for us as well as for Amazon. As I said before, for the next year on our agenda is really scaling and bringing our program into the other parts of our existing offices, particularly Cambodia and Laos, and we are already working on that. So that's really the plan for next year. I target that we will be somewhere around 500 young people, which we will take into this program. Longer term, we clearly want to scale it in terms of volume, but also in terms of other technology areas around AWS. The spectrum of their solution portfolio is immense. So we really want to do that. And this time, actually, we didn't do it completely out of our own activities. I want to find companies and really start to train tailor-made curriculum for companies so that I basically, at the beginning of the course, already have an employment commitment once you are getting through the course. That's really where we want to get to, that you have education and employment coming in one package.
And this has been Tech Talk, and my name is Jeff Sandhu. Hope you've enjoyed the show today, and also check out some of the other stories that I will be sharing or have shared about my recent AWS reInvent 2017 trip. Just download the BFM app on the mobile device and follow Tech Talk or search for AWS. Until my next show, where I talk about AI and how it's taking over the cloud space, enjoy the rest of the programming. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.